can change. Really cold hearts can melt. And I think it's important that we not let those people contaminate us, and that we, especially this Monday or Tuesday, or maybe just in the weeks to come, we concentrate on those people that we can help. We all know the end of the story, right? So by the end of the story, Scrooge has changed, and he goes around to the house, you know, God bless us everyone, and he's taken on Tiny Tim's phrase. And I used to think that Ebenezer Scrooge changed because three spirits appeared to him, and you know, I got to tell you, if a ghost appeared to me tonight, I might change what I'm doing too, especially three. But you know what? I've seen a lot of people, and in fact, I've even heard people say, you know, I wish so-and-so would get baptized, and I wish they'd just get scared enough to get baptized. You know, we think people have to get scared to become a Christian. We think people need to get scared into doing things. You remember church attendance went up after 9/11? Yeah. How long did that last? You will not find this in the Bible. And the way you get people to change is you just scare them real good. Yeah. They used to show smokers pictures of a lung to get them to quit smoking. Did it work? Of course not. Some of you, oh, it worked for me. Well, you're one out of, you know, a billion. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Scare tactics don't work. For the first time, I read The Christmas Carol this year. Never read it before. It's really little. I read it. And I never noticed all the little things in there. And what I wanted to share with you this morning is what I found. And that is that by the end of the story, Scrooge has changed, but there were things that were happening in the story that he already started to change. And the reason I'm sharing it with you here in church is because it reminded me of little things that Jesus dropped and Jesus showed. And I think these are the little pieces we all need to see, because this is what can change us. And this is what we could use to change others. So this morning, here's what I hope you do. I hope to help you combat those Scrooges you're going to encounter, like starting today. What I also hope is that you can combat those Scrooges when you come home from wherever you're going on Monday and Tuesday. But here's the real reason I want to talk about this. I hope that it can remind us all of the things that I think we have forgotten. And what I don't want is for us to end up like Jacob Marley, dragging these heavy chains in eternity that we forged in life. That's what I hope. If we all know the story, and we're gonna get to that text that Jaheim read in Ephesians. In fact, when we get there, you'll know it's the end. We're going to be in Matthew here in just a second, and also in Romans. And we're going to see some of this, but I think we're pretty much all aware of this story. And if you're not, I don't know where you've been. You know, Christmas Carol's, well, I guess I can't say that I haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life, so I'll spot you one. But Scrooge's old partner appears to a member at the beginning of the story, and Marley's been dead a long time. But Marley appears dragging these chains, and I didn't know this till I read the book, but the chains are not made of chains, they're made of old ledger books and money boxes. And the reason these chains are made this way, Marley tells his old partner, remember Marley's dead, you need to remember that if you don't already know that. Marley tells him that his chains are made of these things because these are the sins that I committed in life. And so whatever you do in life, you have to reap that in the afterlife. And so this is why my chains this way. And he tells Scrooge, he says, here's the reason that I've come, because your chains are much heavier than mine. And so Marley's there to warn Ebenezer. And I didn't know this, but I got to looking at Scrooge. And I think Charles Dickens chose this name for a reason. This is an old English verb. We don't use this word anymore, to Scrooge or to screws. It's just an old English verb, which in the mid-17th century, in the middle of the 1800s, it actually means to squeeze or to tighten a grip, which is probably right, because this is the description that we get of Ebenezer Scrooge in the book. He's a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. That's the description that Dickens gives of him. He's this man who wants to squeeze everything. But at the very beginning of the story, he looks to this man who's long dead, and he says these words. He says, "You were always a good friend to me." And then he says something. He says, "Thank you." I don't know if y'all really know this. Gratitude has long gone from our culture and society. It's gone. Some of you are saying, "It was never here." Yes, it was. It's common for us to say thank you. Somebody does something for you, you ought to say, you know, thank you. You know, can you pass this? Oh, thank you. In fact, we have a friend in Maryland. We were giving out Halloween candy, and she would put candy in a child's bag, and they would walk away, and she would say, "You're welcome." And some of them would turn around and say, "Thank you," and she would say, "You're welcome" again. But she's trying to goad them into saying thank you. And I said, "Why do you do that?" And she said, "Because you need to say thank you if someone gives you something." And I was surprised at how many people didn't say thank you. I'm still surprised by how many people don't say thank you. If I open the door for someone and someone comes in, I usually, you know, take her advice. I go, "You're welcome." And then they come back, you know, and say thank you. I think we ought to remind each other to say thank you. And I was griping about this until I noticed when you get to the New Testament, nobody says thank you. You ever notice that? Read the Gospels. Go ahead. I mean, not now because I'm talking, but like, you know, later. But, you know, read the Gospels. When you read it, no one says thank you. Jesus heals someone. Maybe they said it, they just didn't want to write it. But I started to read these gospel stories. I started to look at all these things that Jesus did. No one is grateful, except one. You remember the story of the 10 lepers? Jesus heals them all, and they all go home. Or they all, you know, go back, except one. And Luke says, so he returns to Jesus, and he thanked him. Jesus is shocked. I used to think, oh, he's shocked. Luke says he's a Samaritan. Maybe, I thought that's why he was shocked. You know, he was a Samaritan, so maybe he wasn't supposed to say that. I'm starting to think Jesus was shocked because no one says thank you. Thankfulness, let's change that word, gratitude. Gratitude is thankfulness shown. And when we think about that, it's something that we all ought to do. Here's what I noticed. It's not in the Gospels, but when you look at Paul, like when you start to look at the book of Romans, and you look at the very beginning of Romans, Paul says something that he says in over half his letters. He starts his letters this way. He says, "I thank my God through Jesus Christ for all of you." And here's what's shocking to me, is that when Paul writes these letters, he's writing to people who are arguing and fighting, and he wants them to act right. And so Paul thinks the best way to handle someone who's arguing or who may be trying to bite you is to start the conversation with what? Thank you. You know, it's really hard to be mad at somebody when they say thank you. Try it. It's really hard for them to be mad at you when you say thank you. Thank you. What are you going to do with that? It's gratitude. At the beginning of the story, I think this is where Scrooge's cold heart begins to start melting. And as I read that, I thought, you know, I wonder if there are some cold hearts that I could melt if I just started saying those magic words. Thank you. You were always nice to me. Thank you. But we all know the story's not over. We're not going to go through the whole story because that just takes too long. The spirit shows up. He's going to show him, you know, the ghost of Christmas past. And he picks up Scrooge and he transports him back to when Scrooge is a child. And Scrooge sees himself as a boy sitting in a schoolhouse. All the other boys got to go home for Christmas, but Scrooge has to stay there. And the book says that Scrooge looks to this little boy and he, quote, felt compassion for the first time. A little strange, he's feeling compassion for himself, but he sees this boy who's alone, and he actually feels something. And I too began to think about how often we don't stop long enough to feel anything. How many of you, let's do a show of hands, how many of you are here today, and in the past 30 days, somebody has asked you for money or a donation or a gift to go to some cause? Okay, who is here and nobody has asked you for money whatsoever in the last 30 days? Brooks. My kids. We're not doing a good job. Yeah. I gotta put my kids to work. So everybody asks my kids for a donation. They'll do that because then they'll come to me and say they need money. So don't do that. But you notice, you know, everybody. You know, and somebody said the other day, they said, you know, Christmas time, I feel like everybody's got their hand out. I said, well, of course they do. It's Christmas. You know, of course. But it gets to where, when he told me that, everybody's got their hand out, here's the guy now who's struggling to have compassion. Because when people have, you know, down in their luck, oh, it's just somebody else that needs something. And you remember the Christmas Carol story. That's how Scrooge is. Everybody, you know, Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge. And he says, humbug. You know, everybody wants something for free. Nobody wants to work. Doesn't that sound like our culture? Nobody wants to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. Nobody wants to go to work. Nobody wants to rise up. Everybody just wants to take and take and take and take. If I were to ask those of you who are here, how many of you who raised your hand have felt compassion in the last 30 days, I wonder how many of us would drop our hands. I don't think compassion is something like you got to wake up and say, I got to feel compassion today. I think we have to condition ourselves to feel something. We got to slow down long enough to feel something, to feel it. I saw a woman Friday, and she's in the same spot that I've seen a lot of people, and she was standing there with a sign, of course, that had, you know, she wanted money. I didn't read the sign because I've seen those signs, and I just didn't, I'm not going to read that sign. I'm sure it says what every other sign says. And I'm driving past, and she's got this little bitty barricade right there, and I notice something moving. And I peek over, and it's a little girl. So, and my first thought was, oh, we're bringing our kids now so we can get a bonus. Right? Maybe some of you don't want to admit you thought that too. Maybe I'm just the worst person in the world. But I thought, so that's our trick. But I stopped anyway because I felt like, well, it was a kid. So maybe I had compassion. And I asked her just about her daughter. I asked her what they were going to do. And I said, put a little wall up. Is that so she won't run into the street? And she said, kid you not. No, I didn't want people seeing her and think that I was trying to get more money. Yeah, if I was a balloon. And I looked there and I said, yeah, some people, I don't, you know, it gets such in a rush and it's hard to feel anything anymore. And the story reminded me of just how busy we get. And if we just stop long enough to see, maybe those compassion engines can start again. I started to look in the Gospels. You know, I didn't see anybody being thankful in the Gospels. I mean, you see Jesus, you know, thanking, you know, God for the bread when he eats. Not a lot of people thanking, but then I started looking in the Gospels for the word compassion. It's all over the place. You remember Jesus, the widow at Nain, and she's coming through. She's lost her husband. Now she's lost her only son, and Jesus just feels compassion for her. So what does he do? I'll fix this. I'll just heal the kid. Who does that? Jesus does. Why does he do it? Because was Jesus looking at her economic, you know, checkbook, the checks and balances? Maybe the debits and the credits. And so, you know, I don't think she'll be able to make a lot of money. Why did Jesus do it? Because he felt. How many of you have given money just out of feeling? How many of you have done something spur of the moment just because you felt like it? And it just, yeah, that's called compassion. Yeah, that's what that feels like. And I think we need to pause long enough to get it back. Not so that others get more money, but so that we understand this is what God has called us to do, to feel for people. What about these other situations that Jesus gets him in? It's not just the widow at Nain. Remember, he gets to the spot where 5,000 people have shown up. Whose fault is it that there's no food, by the way? It ain't Jesus' fault. It's their fault. You forgot your lunch. Or you didn't see this coming. It's kind of like, you know, when people want to have work meetings and they want them to run from 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock and they don't have food there. Yeah, I'm not going to those. Absolutely not. Is there food? Oh, then I'll go. You know, somebody's got to be responsible. Who's in charge of the food? They all go out to hear Jesus, and nobody brings a sack lunch except the one kid who's got the sack lunch. The smartest guy there is this little boy who thought long enough to bring some food. Why does Jesus turn this sack lunch into lunch for 5,000 people? Why? Compassion. He doesn't do this, well, we got 5,000. Well, they didn't bring their lunch. I don't know. If I do it, you know. No. He just felt sorry for them. He felt sorry for them. Or how about this one? He has these two blind men. He just feels for them. He just feels bad. It's a feeling. And I think we're all in too big of a rush to feel anymore. I would encourage all of us just to stop. I didn't say give to everything. I didn't say, you know, somebody's got, I'm not telling you to do anything. All I'm telling you to do is stop. You don't have to do anything. Just stop. Just look. Because most likely you'll be wrong. I'm speaking from experience, by the way. You'll be wrong. It wasn't what you thought. And it might be a moment for God to shame you, as he did me. Before the ghost takes Scrooge back, he takes him to one more spot, and it's the house of his old master. Remember, this is a ghost of Christmas past. It's Fezziwig. And he sees this house, and Scrooge is a little bit older, and Scrooge sees himself not the grumpy man that he is now, but he sees himself as this man who's dancing and laughing. And he sees his old master, who always thought it would be nice to spend a little money on the office party. Scrooge sees this happening, and he turns to the ghost, and he says, "I wish I could say a kind word to my clerks right now." In every scene, when Scrooge sees his past, when Scrooge sees someone being generous, when he sees someone being kind, when he sees someone thinking about others, it causes him to be kind. It causes him to show gratitude. It causes him to be generous. Imagine that. Charles Dickens didn't make this up. This was pioneered by Jesus Christ. Jesus knew that if you can show kindness and mercy and generosity to people, people can change. Paul really wanted to mine this idea. And in Ephesians chapter 4, and this is the text that Jaheim read, verses 29 through 32. I want to read that again because all of these qualities seem to be right here when Paul's speaking. He says, "Don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Don't grieve the Holy Spirit of God with whom you're sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness and rage and anger and brawling and slander along with every form of malice." And here's verse 32. This ought to be a verse that every Christian memorizes. "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as Christ God forgave you." Let us think about what somebody once did to us. That's what we ought to do to others. I thought about an invitation this morning. I thought about, what does this have to do with me? What does Paul's words have to do with me? What does Jesus' feelings have to do with me? And the more I thought about it, the more I began to remember that Jesus warned us over and over and over about not paying attention to our life. He warned us about it. It was one of his warnings. In reading this story for the first time this year, because I'm a nerd, I started to read other Charles Dickens books, except Tale of Two Cities, because that's mega boring, so I didn't even do that one. I did the first, and it was the best of times, the worst of times, I was done. That's going back to the library. The Christmas Carol was written in 1843, I think, is when it was published. Charles Dickens published his first book in 1836, 7 years prior. And this first book was actually a collection of little bitty stories. So I figured, hey, I can read these in 5 minutes. I'll just concentrate on this book. Right smack in the middle of the book. So remember, 7 years before Christmas Carol, right smack in the middle of Charles Dickens' first book is this little bitty story about a church sexton. I know we don't have sextons anymore. I'll explain it to you later. But he works for the church. And he's working there at the church, and on Christmas Eve, he has to dig a grave in the church graveyard. And he's looking around, and he's seeing these children hopping home for Christmas Eve, and he starts to wish and pray that they would get the whooping cough. He starts to wish and pray that they would get all these diseases. And then he looks down at the coffin, and he says, "And I've got to dig this hole." And he says, "It's a Christmas box." And he looks at the children, and he says, "Bah." I think 7 years before Christmas Carol, this is the beginning of the character Ebenezer Scrooge. The one who sees others and thinks negatively. The one who on Christmas wants to just ruin it for everybody else. And when I thought about this little bitty story that grows into this timeless classic that's still being adapted today, I thought about all the words that Jesus talked about in his Sermon on the Mount. Jesus warns us that small bouts of anger, those little stories in our life of anger, those can quickly turn into murder. Jesus warns us that looking at other people just to look leads to adultery. Jesus warned us that foolish purchases on the earth can lead to damning investments for eternity. Jesus warns us that our little tendencies to screws our life or to put the screws to others will turn us into squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinners. Those little bitty things that we do will cost us our lives. And what we do in this life will determine the chains we drag in the next. One has to do with the other. Dickens didn't make this up. Jesus talked about it. Paul talked about it. But this morning's not about you, because then it wouldn't be a Bible story. If it was about you, it would just be a Christmas story. So here's the invitation I want all of us to do. I want us all to think about that person on Tuesday. The one you don't want to see? Yeah, that one. The stepson-in-law, maybe? The new girlfriend of him? Or her? Or maybe those. Maybe you're not going to see them on Tuesday. Maybe you're going out of your way not to see them whatsoever. And that's fine. But I want us all to think about, maybe it's not the Scrooge in your Christmas. Maybe it's the Scrooge when you go back to work. Or maybe it's the Scrooge when you go home today. I don't care who it is, but I want us to think of that person. Because the gospel message is about you thinking about someone else besides yourself. So here's what I would like for us to do. I would like to think of what we could do for that person. There's a small story I didn't tell you about in that Christmas carol. There's that little bitty part when Scrooge goes back to see himself as a child. Remember, as a boy, he's sitting in the schoolhouse alone, and he can't go home for Christmas. And I didn't know this till I read the book, but the reason he can't go home for Christmas is because his father hates him. He can't go home. He has no family. He has no one to care for him. And so he's sitting in the schoolhouse, and who shows up but his sister. And his sister comes in and she says, Father's changed and we want you to come home. And she says, but even if Father hasn't changed, I love you and I want you to come home. And Scrooge, as a young boy, just cries. And Scrooge, the old man, is watching this and he starts crying. And he says, I love my sister because she loved me when no one else would. And you remember at the end of the book, where does Scrooge end his night? But at his nephew's house. And the reason he does is because his sister came and got him when no one else would. She cared for him when no one else would. She was generous when no one else was. So this Christmas, who's the Scrooge? Go get them. Show them kindness. Show them gratitude. Show them graciousness. Show them generosity. And watch a heart thaw. Church, people can change. Everybody can change. Even you. Who's the Scrooge in your story? Here's a better question. Let's think about who you're going to be in the story as we stand and sing.
Stay and hear, ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. Then his loving, tender voice obeying, bear his yoke, his burden take. Find the yoke his hand is on you laying, light and easy for his sake. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest.
It's not like another sermon, I promise. We have a baptism today, but the baptistry doesn't work. We're doing some work to it. So what we have to do, the class that I teach downstairs, will not be meeting because the baptism is at 11 o'clock. And there's like a bunch of reasons why it had to be at 11. But it's at 11 o'clock at the Antioch Church of Christ. And so we're going over there. I don't know if y'all... There she is. Okay, she's hiding. So Skylar DeVideo is... You just raise your hand, Skylar, so everybody can see your hand. Yep. So she's going to be baptized today at 11. And her husband's here in town. And I know Sister Charlotte and Ronnie are super proud. So we're gonna do that in about an hour over there. And if you're in my class and you want to, you know, run over to Antioch, it's like 4 miles away. You want to run over to Antioch, and we're gonna do the baptism there at 11 o'clock.
We're gonna close out in our hymnals tonight, guys. Not tonight, this morning. Sorry about that. Turn with me to number 37. Johnny, go ahead and cut that slide, please. Yeah, number 37.